You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and really pleased to have Alistair McLeod with us once again. And I would strongly suggest that those of you who are really interested in gold and the major markets that all influence and make a difference in our lives, that you might want to go to the research page at Gold Money every Thursday, where Alistair presents a very thought-provoking and always a very meaty discussion. In fact, it was, I think it was last week, my realtor here in the small town where we live said he picked up Alistair's missive, and he says, "Doggone it, that thing requires some effort and some energy to read through it, because it isn't light. You know, it isn't Twitter." Well, actually, Alistair does do a lot of things on Twitter. He does tweet things out that are to let people know what he's thinking. But his missives, his essays, are very meaty and very, I think, very well done, and give you reason. He's not just giving you headlines, is what I'm trying to say. So thanks for being with us again, Alistair.
That's my pleasure, Jay.
It's always good to have you with us, and the topic we want to talk to you about, because you've written so much about it, talked about it in the last month or so, is Basel III. And the question we're asking is, will Basel III regulation lead to honest gold price discovery? And, you know, I think I remarked to you a few minutes ago that if we have honest gold price discovery in that market, that would be the only market we do have honest price discovery, it seems. And certainly we don't get it in the currency markets. We don't get it in the bond markets. We don't get it hardly any place. But anyway, I digress. Let's get into Basel III. Regulation. It's the third iteration. I think there was a Basel I, Basel II, Basel III, and I believe it was created. I think it was a creature of the Bank for International Settlement, perhaps, and that it was created after the 2008 financial crisis. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Basically, the G20, who sort of met after the Lehman failure, mm-hmm. Basically wanted to ensure as much as possible that the sort of the domino effect of one bank failing and, you know, triggering a failure in another bank and so on, was addressed. And that's really what Basel III is all about. And it attempts to address this by forcing the banks to ensure that long-term commitments on the liability side of their balance sheet matches the long-term commitments on the asset side of the balance sheet, so that there isn't, if you like, a mismatch in terms mm-hmm. of short-term funding, which can run out of the door at any one moment, leaving mm-hmm. You know, the bank with a problem because it can't cover its assets, as it were. So that's really what it was all about. And the way they've tackled this is they've introduced a new thing, which is called the net stable funding ratio. Now, this is a ratio of two separate things. You've got available stable funding. Now, that is applied on the liability side of the balance sheet, mm-hmm. so that the various classifications of liability are ranked in terms of their usability to fund the other side of the balance sheet. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for example, Tier 1 equity, mm-hmm. You can use all that. You know, there's no sort of haircut or anything on that at all. That's there. That's never going to change. So that's brilliant. They take things like small deposits. Now, they assume that small deposits are relatively stable. Mm-hmm. You know, according to the Bank of International Settlements, gone are the days of people queuing around the block to take their money out of the bank. That mm-hmm. doesn't happen. And in any event, we're talking about deposits which are guaranteed one way or the other by government or the banking system, uh-huh. you know, so there's a payout, if you like, of $125,000 or whatever the figure is. Mm-hmm. So that is regarded as relatively stable. So you can use 90% of that to fund the other side of your balance sheet. Now, derivatives are something else. You can't use a derivative, a net derivative position on your liability side to finance anything on the asset side of your balance sheet. Okay. Now, not only that, but in the Bank of International Settlements regulations, which have basically been adopted by everyone, they actually mentioned gold. Now, what they mean by this is unallocated gold. Now, unallocated gold is just a derivative. It just so happens that it's an account in dollars, for example, if it's a dollar-based bank, but the liability is tied to the gold price. You know, the gold doesn't exist. Unallocated gold does not exist. And if you think it does, then please tell me where they're storing it, because it's not there. Okay, so where does this rank? The answer is you cannot use any of that. No gold, no silver, no copper, no oil, any of these commodities. You cannot use these to fund the other side of your balance sheet. Okay, so that's the available stable funding. It's on your liability side of your balance sheet. The other side of the balance sheet produces another figure, and that's the required stable funding. So if you have got actual cash on the balance sheet, like it's an asset and it's sitting in a vault, all banks, all retail banks have cash in the vaults, okay? So that requires no funding at all from the other side. So that's, you know, 100% bank, no problem at all. You work down through various qualities of asset, and basically, if it's an asset which you can't get rid of very, very quickly, then there is a factor involved from your available stable funding on the other side, and this then becomes the required stable funding. In the case of gold, you need to back that 85% with available stable funding. Okay, so this basically starts chewing up the your available stable funding. Not 100%, 85%. So this is not good news. Now, basically what it means is that if, and it depends how these regulations are interpreted by local regulators, if you like, national regulators. But basically, when it comes to derivatives, assuming that a derivative is specifically offsets another derivative so that you've got a balanced position across your balance sheet, then, you know, they cancel out because you've got no net position because they're interested in the net position. If, on the other hand, you do have net positions, and you can have net positions on both sides of the balance sheet at the same time because they can be different sorts of derivatives, then you've got a funding problem because, you know, you're chewing up balance sheet capacity by running a position. So market making, if you like, or running short positions and all the rest of it, basically is pretty undesirable as far as the Treasury Department of your bank is concerned. So,
it's an economic issue that it won't be profitable for the banks to go into the markets and sell gold in the futures markets.
Exactly that. It's both the unregulated over the counter markets and also futures markets. Now, it was this that got the LBMA absolute screaming blue murder to our local regulator, who's the Prudential Regulatory Authority. I mean, what a mouthful. Anyway, that's what they call themselves. And effectively, what they said is that, you know, this will close us down. An 85% RSF, which is the required stable funding, they don't mention the other side of it. They say it undermines clearing and settlement, it drains liquidity, dramatically increases financing costs, and then they chuck in, it curtails central bank operations. Now, when does this apply? Well, the EU, the Eurozone, and the EU banking system, which is also got a few national currencies in it, are applying this from the end of this month. So we've only got 3 weeks before those banks actually have this new method of calculating the relationship between, you know, the funding liabilities and the assets. As far as the UK is concerned, this is to be introduced on the 1st of January 2022, so at the end of this year. Now, in practice, what happens is that banks will plan ahead of the event so that they will be positioned so that they are ready for it. And what that means is that in the second half of this year, members of the London Bullion Market Association, of which there are 43 banks, will start looking at positioning themselves so that they no longer have a net exposure into the gold market or indeed other derivatives. This also covers oil, incidentally. You know, any bank financing, you know, oil, silver, copper, you know, you name it.
Any commodity.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is a big deal, and it's across a huge, great range of everything. I mean, everything the bank does is affected by this. So this isn't just a question of saying, well, you know, they're out to get the gold market or the silver market. No, it's the complete thing. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this is that the notice was actually put out by America's Office of Controller of the Comptroller of the Currency on the 24th of February, saying that they're going to be adopting the net stable funding ratio as of July the 1st. Mm-hmm. So America's going to be doing this as well. Huh. Now, what does this mean? It basically means that if you look at the futures market, the COMEX market, which is only one-tenth, roughly, the ninth or a tenth of the total paper gold market, If we look at that futures market, you have got on the non-spec side, who provide, if you like, the feedstock for the speculators. Mm-hmm. You have obviously producers, and here are the mines and the refiners and all the rest of it on one side. Now they are the non-specs; they tend to be net short. Mm-hmm. But the vast bulk of the non-specs is the swap category. Now, mostly, not entirely, but mostly, those are the trading desks of bullion banks. Mm-hmm. So basically, they're going to be effectively closing down. Mm-hmm. I mean, so at the moment, the relationship is that 25% of the speculative positions on COMEX are provided by the producer category, and the other 75 are produced by the swaps category. So if we take swaps out, you can see what's going to happen to the market. It's going to become relatively illiquid.
That's
the futures market. But
Alistair, it will become then actually more of a actual commodity market and not a fantasy gold market or whatever that it is now.
Yes, that's correct. And where this particularly matters is in London, because if you look at Loco London and Loco Zurich and all the rest of it, that's 10 times the size of COMEX. But in London, what the bullion banks do, the bullion bank members of the LBMA do, is they offer unallocated accounts to their customers. Now, allocated gold, incidentally, is not involved with this at all. Allocated gold is always custodial gold. Okay, that doesn't appear on the bank's balance sheet at all. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about unallocated gold, basically what happens is that the bullion bank, when it's running an account for customers, has unallocated gold liabilities into the customers. Now, if you take as a rough guide that their exposure to their customers is probably about five times the daily settlement that you see in London, which is around about 30 million ounces a day in very round terms. That gives you an idea of the scale of what is going to be wound down on the customers. Because these banks will no longer be offering unallocated accounts to their customers. So what they will do, I mean, they don't have the gold to pay them out. They will just say, right, okay, the value of this account in gold terms is X dollars. Mm-hmm. We will give you X dollars and close the account. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are going to be quite a few people who think they have got exposure to the gold price who suddenly find that they no longer have exposure to the gold price. Now, some of them will just say, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. Tough, we'll go and look at something else. But in this environment, which is increasingly inflationary, Mm-hmm. I think that a larger and larger portion of the people who will be shut out by the closure of their mm-hmm. unallocated accounts will seek to replace them with custodial gold.
Mm-hmm. Now, the real thing.
Yeah, the real thing. So the question is, where does this come from? And I don't know the answer to that, because there is no liquidity, really, no meaningful liquidity around at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's the nub of it. Now, I think that that is of secondary importance to something else. And that is, and we've discussed this on your show, the rate of monetary inflation over the last year has accelerated beyond anything anyone dreamt of. The governments have just gone absolutely crazy about printing money to finance COVID, finance whatever. You know, your president, God bless him, is, you know, he's just gone MMT mad. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
Ours is not much better. They're playing lip service to a degree. Well, you know, we'll get it all sorted out. We'll try and raise taxes and so on. But, you know, the fact is that they've printed an awful lot of money. Now, the effect of that, we're already seeing it feeding through into prices. Why? Because as people emerge from lockdown, there isn't the production to satisfy their demand. And bizarrely, we're even finding that people have got used to not working and don't really want to go back to work.
Right. Yep.
And particularly since unemployment benefits have become relatively generous.
Mm-hmm.
So the effect of this is that prices are not only rising, but they're going to rise considerably further. And if you take into account the real prices, as shown by John Williams of Shadow Stats, who I think you've had on your show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's now talking about, I mean, his computations show that the rate of price inflation is running at something like 11 to 12%.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
You know, so what does that do to interest rates? I mean, interest rates have got to go to that sort of relationship. I was going to say level. I mean, you know, it should be a bit above that level. But so there's going to be a moment of discovery in markets that the whole pricing mechanism in markets, and we're talking financial markets, is completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates have got to rise. There will be a reluctance to raise them by the Fed. And guess what? I mean, we've talked about the John Law lookalike bubble.
Yes.
You know, the dollar will then be printed even faster in order to try and stop a collapse in stock markets.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? I mean, the current fiat currencies end up being destroyed. Now, it's against that environment that we see this change in the Basel regulations coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a double whammy, potentially. It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they first started talking about this, I mean, this paper went out for consultation a long time ago. It went out in the spring of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
It was finally approved in October 2014. And here we are, 7 years later, just introducing it. Now, if they'd done it in 2014, arguably, there wouldn't have been too much of a problem. I mean, gold was still in a bear market. It wasn't until December 2015 that the market turned. And they could have introduced it without an enormous drama. But to introduce this at this stage is really going to produce unintended consequences in the gold market. Of that, I feel fairly sure.
Yeah. And there's so much more, of course, to talk to you about, have you explain here, but geopolitics enters into the equation as well. And your last article, The Geopolitics of Gold, touched on it as well. One of the things I noticed, I think there's something like 63 countries that are members of the Bank for International Settlement. And absent from those countries, a lot of African countries, I think, are not part of it, but neither is Russia or China. Do I have that right?
I can't confirm that because I haven't actually looked at it.
But I mean, so yeah. Russia and China have been building up huge, especially China, mm-hmm. by your work, you know, your sleuthing, that China has really built up a tremendous amount of gold. Talk to us a little bit about that, and talk to us about how that might fit into this whole equation with about 3 minutes left.
Yeah, okay. Well, I won't go into the basis of my computation other than just to say that I came to the conclusion that by 2002, China had secretly acquired something between 20,000 and 25,000 tons of gold. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really expect the yuan to be backed by gold. I don't think that is part of the current plan. But given what I've just said about the dollar, if the dollar does have a sort of a fiat-style collapse because of that John Law relationship, mm-hmm. whereby the Fed is just printing money in order to support the market and will have to accelerate the printing to stop it collapsing, yeah. then you can see that China's real gold position then it becomes of tremendous geopolitical importance. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sure that the American government, the security services actually know the true position there. We don't know America's true position, but we've had enough indication that there's quite a lot of gold which should be there, which isn't there. I mean, for example, the Germans tried to get their gold back. They've only got part of it back. I mean, they got back what they agreed to get back. Mm-hmm. And also the Netherlands have removed their gold. I mean, there is, if you like, an international concern that America doesn't have the gold that she should have, whereas it plainly China has. Now, this is going to change the balance of power hugely. Mm-hmm. If there's anything like a collapse of the purchasing power of fiat currencies. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing about it. I would suggest your listeners actually go to that article to look at the detail in it, because I think it is actually a very, very important topic.
Indeed it is. The geopolitics of gold you're referring to, right? The last one you wrote. Yeah, absolutely. It's a must read if you're really serious about this issue. And I think if you're not now, you soon will be, I think, ultimately. And I have to think, Alistair, that what's going on now, if this really works out as you're suggesting, it's going to cause a lot of people to think a lot differently about the markets they've taken for granted for so many years. It could be a day of reckoning not far away, perhaps. There's others that are suggesting maybe the BIS will find a way to excuse the major banks, but 30 seconds left. I guess we don't have time to go into that. But you, again, if people read your work, they'll get your thinking on some of these issues that we just simply don't have time to get into on this show. Alistair, go ahead.
Yeah, just very quickly, I would discount completely any idea that people are going to back off from this Basel III thing for the gold market.
Yeah, and they're doing this really because they're concerned about global liquidity and the sort of domino effect you talked about. So it's really not to nail gold. It's really because they're scared. They're scared to death of what might happen in a chain reaction implosion like we had in 2008, I think.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much, Alistair, for being with us, and we'll look to do it again sometime in the near future. Well, folks, next week I'm not sure exactly who my major guest will be, but Dr. Quentin Henning will be here as well. He will be here, I should say, and we will have someone else. I just don't know who that's going to be, so keep an eye on your inbox to find out who we'll have on the show next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.